Okay, so Shmuel Aleph, Perek Beis, Chapter 2. And last week we went through the Tefillah of Chana, which is mostly a Shira, really. Chana praises Hashem for his Ashkacha Pratis, for answering our Tefillos. We said, mentioned that it's a Nevuah, it's a prophecy for the future, that that she will, for all of the victories that the Jewish people will have over various enemies. And she ends with a tefillah for her son, Shmuel, that that he should be overcome his enemies, and also a line about Shaul HaMelech and David HaMelech. And that's the tefillah of Chana. So we're going to pick up from Pasuk Yod Aleph, verse 11. Vayelech Elkanah haramasa al beiso. And Elkanah went back to his house. The Hanar haya misharis es Hashem. And the lad, referring to Shmuel, he remained behind in the Mishkan to serve Hashem. As Tanei Eli HaKohen, in front of Eli the Kohen. And the connect meaning that he would serve Hashem with Eli, that Eli would be the one to train him for serving in the Mishkan. Pasuk Yud Beis, Uvnei Eli b'nei vili Ya'al lo yadu es Hashem. The sons of Eli, their names were Chafni and Pinchas. The sons of Eli were Bnei Buyal. They were sinners or yokeless men. It's a pretty strong word, Bnei Buyal. Lo Yadu es Hashem, they did not know Hashem. So we'll have to spend some time understanding exactly, as much as we can, what they did wrong. First we'll see the Pesukim, then we'll talk about the Gemara a little bit. So let's see what happened. Umishpat haKohanim Esam. So this was the law of the Kohanim with the nation. Meaning, this wasn't the actual halacha, but this is what the rules that the Kohanim at that time set down. Chafni and Pinchas set these rules for how they would run things in the Mishkan. Ko'ish zoveach zevach, anyone who would bring a sacrifice, uva nar ha-kohen kivashel habasar, and one of the lads of the Kohen, seemingly an assistant of Chafni and Pinchas, a younger Kohen, would come, kivashel habasar, while the person bringing the karban was cooking the meat, v'hamazleg shlosh ha-shinayim b'yado, and a fork, a pitchfork of three-pronged pitchfork was in his hand. So we seemingly are talking about a carbon shlamim. A carbon shlamim was brought by by anyone. And the carbon shlamim was eaten by the owners normally. And just specific parts of it were given to the Kohen. Some parts of it were put on the Mizbeach, like the innards and the fat, but the chaz of the shok, the thigh, and the chaz is like the, I don't know what the chest, were given, the torso, were given to the Kohen. And the rest was eaten by the owners. That's normally how it works. But with this carbon, so the Kohen would come while it was being cooked, while the meat was being cooked, to eat. Again, right, the only part that went on the Mizbeach was the innards and the fat. The rest was just eaten, boiled up and eaten, or cooked, barbecued, whatever they wanted, really. So while it was being cooked, the Kohen, the Nar, the lad, would come with a fork. Vehika vakior ovadud ovakalachas ovaparur, and he would strike with his pitchfork against These are four different types of pot that they may have been cooking it in. And he would hit, meaning he would stab down as hard as he could to try to get as much meat on the fork as possible. And kol asher yale hamazle gikach ha-kohen bo. Whatever the fork would pull up, the kohen would take with him. Kacha ya'asu l'chol Yisrael habayim sham b'shilo. This is what they would do for anyone who came to Shilo to bring a karbon. Additionally, the pasuk goes on, it says, Gam b'terem yakhiru nesachelev. Also, before, I guess this is going to be in other scenarios, as we'll see in a moment. B'terem yakhiru nesachelev. Sometimes, even before they burn the fat, Uva nara kohen, and the lad of the kohen would come, the Amar la'ish hazoveah, and he would say to the man who was bringing the karbon, Knavasa lichlos la'kohen, give me some meat to roast for the kohen. V'lo yikach mimcha basar mevushal kimcha. He doesn't want to take, he's not interested in cooked meat, he wants it raw, in order that he can make it the way he wants it. He likes it roasted, he likes it barbecued, and he's not going to wait until after you boil it up. He wants it now. And this was before they would bring the chalev, before they would bring the fat. Normally, it would seem the kohen was supposed to wait until after the fats were burned before partaking of any of the meat. Vayomer elav ha'ish. And the man would respond, Kater yakirun kayom achelev. First, let us burn up the fat on the mizbeach. The kachachal kasher tevan efshaf. And then afterwards, you can take whatever you want. The amar lo, and the lad of the kohen would respond, lo, or here we have another kriyuksiv. I didn't figure out an elul. Elovart for this low and low, as I did last week. But the Omar low, he would say no, because you should give it to me now. The imlo, and if not, lakachti v'chazka, I'm going to take it by force. I think it was common for the people who bring the karbanos to respond that no, we don't want you to. I don't think it's a specific first thing. I think this would happen. Yeah, this would happen on a regular basis that they would come and they would say, you know, give me some fats before, and he would say no, I'm taking it by force. Okay, let's see one more pasuk. Vatehi chatas ha'na'arim gedola me'od efnei Hashem. And the sin of the lads was very great. Because the men were disgracing the mincha of Hashem. So we have to go back through and see exactly what they were doing wrong. I'll just point out in this pasuk, it says at first that it was the chatas ha-ne'arim, it was the sin of the ne'arim of the lad, and it says kiniyatu ha-anashim, because the men were disgracing the mincha of Hashem. So that's also something that we have to understand. In general, right, we started off going back to pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12. So it says, the sons of Eli were B'nai B'liyah, were yokeless. And then, after that, we don't have another mention of these men themselves, only a mention of lad. What's that?
Are there?
Yeah, there are. Yeah. It seems like Hophni and Pinchas and the lad, the young Kohanim. So,
another Kohanim were in the footsteps?
Some were, at least. Whoever these Ne'arim are, whoever these lads were following in their footsteps.
Why can't we? Why can't we treat the Ne'arim as the sons of Eli?
So that's what I thought at first, and it could be you can read it that way.
Aren't they considered like that because they're the attendants of the Kohanim? So they're taking orders.
Well, the question is, who are these attendants? Are they Chafni and Pinchas? Are they attendants of the Kohanim, or are Chafni and Pinchas the Kohanim, and they have attendants who are being referred to? In the
two different dates, by the way,
or
say the Kohen.
Say that again?
Why would it have both work?
In which pasuk? At that last pasuk? Oh, yeah. Oh, Yud Gimel? Oh, the Kohanim? Na'ar HaKohen. Okay, yeah. I think, that's a valid point. It talks about the Kohanim, and then it talks about the lads of the Kohanim, the servants. So, okay, we're going to assume for now, right? If you read the psukim like Mr. Sapper wants to read it, that they're referring to Chafni and Pinchas the whole time, then it's a very easy read. It says Chafni and Pinchas, who were the sons of Eli the Kohen, they were yokeless, they were sinners, and then it goes on to describe what they did wrong, which we'll have to talk about exactly what it was, but it seemed they were taking too much meat from the Karbanos, or taking it early in one or the other, or both. And that would be a simple read. The other way to read it, it's also fine, is that they were instructing the lads to go on their behalf to do this, which is also, just as bad, if not worse. They're corrupting others. So if we start at that last pasuk, pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17. So I pointing out there it says, and the sin, Batni chatas ha-ne'arim gedol ha-ne'od, and the sin of the ne'arim, the sin of the lads was very great. Espenei Hashem, in the face of Hashem. Because the men, not the lads, the men were disgracing the mincha of Hashem. So already here we have, what? Right, so what we can see, one way to read this pasuk, is that because the Bnei Eli, the sons of Eli, Chafni and Pinchas, were disgracing the mincha, the karbanos of Hashem, so as a result of that, the lads learned from them, the young lads, and themselves were mivaze, were disgracing the karbanos also. And so therefore it says, and the sin of the lads was very great, because the men, Chafni and Pinchas, were disgracing the menachos, the karbanos. I don't know. I think there are Shatim, I think, but I don't remember offhand. Let's now backtrack again to what they were doing wrong. So back to verse 13, Pasuk Yud Gimel. So it says that they set out this law, the Kohanim made established their own law on their own, that when a man brought a karban, so the nar, the lad, would come and he would stab the meat and take a very large chunk from it. So first of all, this is not deserving. They're not entitled to eat this meat. It's not one of the matnos kahuna. It's not one of the gifts that go to the kohen. The kohen, only, as we mentioned, is entitled to the chaz of a shok, the torso and the thigh. So that's the first issue. It's like stealing, basically. What's the word? Forcing. There's a better word than stealing in this scenario, where you force someone to give you something.
could say misappropriation.
Yeah.
That's too weak.
Yeah, and I'm looking for more like a mafia type of word.
I don't know. We have that in Spyro a lot.
Racketeering?
Yeah.
Wondering?
Yeah.
Whacking?
Mafia.
What's the context of the word again that you're like?
That they're forcing them to give it them.
Extortion.
Extortion, thank you.
Yeah.
Extortion.
Or intimidation.
They're basically extorting meat from the people bringing the carbonic. Yeah. Now, and that's really the word that the Malbim uses, calls it chamas, which that's what chamas is, basically. It's extortion. It's forcing someone to part with something. Either you force them to sell it to you, or something like that. Secondly, they were taking a lot. Not only were they taking, but they brought this big three-pronged pitchfork and stabbed it as hard as they could so it could go as deep as possible and bring up as much meat. And they were really taking a very large portion.
They were taking more than they're supposed to get, right?
Yeah, besides, they weren't supposed to get this part at all. And not only were they taking it, but they were taking a very large amount.
They're violating the Torah, like, commandment, like, of what amount that you're supposed to get.
Right, there's, right. Thirdly, the Malbim says, the very fact that they sent the young lad to do it, besides for the point that we were saying before, that, you know, they're corrupting them and they're not teaching them properly, but that itself is a bizayon, it's a disgrace to the kachim, to the karbanos. You're going to take karbanos you're taking meat from a karban. You don't send someone else to do it. This is a holy thing. You're taking from the Shulchan Hashem, from the table of God. You know, this isn't something that you just send someone else to do. You should do it on your own. And that itself, to send the boys to do it on their behalf, was a bizayon, was a disgrace. And lastly, the Malbim points out is that, or actually, there's two more things, which I think are very basically similar, is that they didn't pay attention, they didn't differentiate between who was bringing the carbon, how big the carbon was, what the person could afford, how much money they had. They just, well, whoever came, this was the rule. You want to bring a carbon, you got to get past the Kohanim first, and you have to give up a chunk of meat, three prongs on a pitchfork. Doesn't matter who you are, how big your carbon is, how much money you have, and they were treating everyone equally. That's the difference. He says that's what the pasuk is telling you in Yudalid, where it describes these four different types of pots. It says bakior, obadud, obakalachas, obaparur. The Malbim says these are four different sizes of pots, and they're used for different kinds of karbanos. Specifically, he says, if it was an ox, so they would do it in the biggest type of pot, which was a big kior, and the smallest one went into, sorry, a smaller ox, a big ox went in a kior, a smaller ox went in a dud. A dud is a modern Hebrew word as well, that people have a dud shemesh on the roof. They have a solar...
Solar collector?
Yeah, the dude is the boiler, is the hot water boiler. And he says a goat, they would cook in a parur, and he skipped the kalaka, another type of pot, I think. But he says they didn't differentiate, and I don't think that maybe they were a little bit lighter on the fork, on the stab, when it was a smaller pot or whatever, because it says, no, vehika, they would hit hard, and they would do a full, strong stab no matter what it was. They didn't differentiate, and that was the last avla, the last avera that was within this act, was not to differentiate between the carbon and not to differentiate between the person who was bringing the carbon. No matter what, they will extort the same amount of meat. Okay. So, that was the first kind of issue. Then there was the second part, which began in Pasuk Tesvav, where it describes that they would take the meat early sometimes. If they weren't interested in taking it already cooked, so then they would even take it raw. They wanted it barbecued today, so they would take it early. You were supposed to wait till the fat were strong on the mizbeach, and they would take it early. It would seem. There are mefarshim who try to justify what their halachic reasoning was and what the machlokas exactly was. What was the dispute here in halachic terms? I didn't have a chance. You have to know a lot of background in kachim and the halachas of karbanos to understand what it was. I didn't have a chance to really delve into that. But there's, you know, in general, the mefarshim want to try to. Some of them, you know, justify as much as we can what their intent was, why they did this. So maybe we'll touch on that a little bit also. Let's see what we're going to do next. I have a Ramami Pano for you for later. Let's see a little bit more, because there's a little bit more to the story. Of what they did. So, Pasuk Yitzchak, we have a little interruption here where we basically compare them to Shmuel. So look, we're up to Pasuk Yitzchak. Shmuel mishareis es p'nei Hashem. And Shmuel, he was serving Hashem. Na'ar chagur eifod bad, a lad who was wearing this linen apron. Basically, he didn't learn from them. He was serving properly. He again learned from Eli, their father. He seems to have gotten good chinuch from Eli, but Chofni and Pinchas, Eli's actual son, did not seem to have received a good chinuch. And Shmuel served Hashem. Na'ar chagor eifod bad. So he would wear this ephod, which was a sign of chashivas, of importance, of greatness. And even though he was only a nar, he was still a lad, he had reached this great level where he now was entitled or wore this ephod, which is a sign, this apron of sorts, which is a sign of his greatness. Also here the Mefarshim say, it just says now at this point that Shmuel Mesharis has been Hashem. Now it was Shmuel who was serving Hashem, as opposed to where we started today in Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, where it says the Hanar Haya Mesharis Hashem, referring to Shmuel, that the lad Shmuel was serving Hashem as Pnei Eli Akohen in front of Eli. Eli was still teaching him. At this point, it no longer mentions Eli. It says, and Shmuel was serving Hashem. It's telling us that he had at this point grown up and he no longer required Eli's teaching, Eli's guidance. I do not know how old he was. Umi'il katon kaselo imo, and his mother made him a small me'il, a shirt, a robe, okay. The house of lo miyamim yamima, and she would bring it up to him each year, a new robe. Ba'alosa es isha, when she went up, brought up her husband, when she went up with her husband, lizbach ezelach hayamim, to bring the karban of the day, meaning when they would come up to the Mishkan for the regalim, for the shalosh regalim, so she would bring a robe. There's a little bit of a discussion about this word yamim yamima, if it means that she would bring him a new robe each of the shalosh regalim, or is it once a year? We have the word yamim yamima in the very, I think, the first pasuk of the Sefer Shmuel, and there also we have the same machlokas. Sorry, it wasn't the first pasuk. It was the third pasuk. It said that Elkanah would go up from his city, miyamim yamima, which some Mefarshim said meant once a year. Some Mefarshim say meant every one of the Shalosh Regalim. Here, there's a general agreement that it means once a year, that you would bring him a new robe once a year. Kind of an interesting thing why it says this. It's different Mefarshim. None of them really were compelling, or I didn't connect with any of the pshatim that I saw. I think, in a general sense, you see the continued connection between his mother and Shmuel, despite the fact that Shmuel had been destined, had been dedicated by his mother to serve in the Mishkan for his entire life. But despite that, she still maintained a connection with him. They didn't have email or texting in those days, but every year when she would come to the Mishkan, she would bring him something, because that mother-son relationship was still there. Ubeirach Eli es Elkanah ves Ishto, and Eli, the Kohen Gadol, blessed Elkanah and his wife. The Omar, and he said, Yasem Hashem lecha zera min ha'isha hazo. Hashem should give you more offspring from this woman. Instead, in replacement of the loan that she went to Hashem, meaning that she's giving up Shmuel, she dedicated Shmuel to Hashem, she, in a sense, lent him to Hashem to serve him. And so Eli gives her a bracha that you should have other children to raise in your house. The Hokul and the Komo, and they went back to their house. So I think the Savit says they went back to try to produce another child, to act on that bracha right away. But Eli here says, Eli gives them a bracha that they should have more children like Shmuel, and also that in a way it was, to replace him, not to replace him, but instead, that since she would not have a child at home, because she dedicated Shmuel to be in the Mishkan, so he gave her a bracha that she should have a child that could remain at home. That's what the Malbim says. And indeed, in Chafal, if it says, Yifakad Hashem es Chana, because Hashem had remembered Chana, Vatahar vatelet shlosh habanim ushtei banot, and she became pregnant, and I guess numerous times, and she gave birth to three sons and two daughters. Vayigdal hanar Shmuel im Hashem, and as for Shmuel, so he grew up with Hashem, he remained with Hashem. So I do at some point want to discuss this a little bit, with five children and that little pasuk, but before I want to get back to the sons of Eli, because there's another very important pasuk, which is the next pasuk, where it says in pasuk Chafez, the Eli zaking the od, and Eli was very elderly, the shama ishwasher yasin banav lechol Yisrael, and he heard what his sons were doing to the people of Israel, asher yishkevun es hanashim hatsovo tezahamoy, that they would lie with the women who were camped out at the entrance to the Olam Moed. And after this, he's going to rebuke them. So here we have a new, we're introduced to a new Aveira, which is interesting that it's like, almost as an aside, before we talked about that they were B'nai B'liyal, they were yokeless, and it goes on to describe what they did, and it says that they had a great sin, and now here, almost as an aside, it says, and Eli, who was elderly, he heard what his sons were doing, that they were sleeping with the women outside the Olam Moed. Maybe they didn't start doing it till later. Possible. So, what exactly were they doing? So the Mefarshim, Rashi, Radak, First they say kimashmo, which means as it sounds, that's what they were doing. But then they say chazal pshat, derabosenu amru. Chazal in the Gemara say don't take this pasuk so literally, and let's see what the Gemara says. So the Gemara is in a couple of places, but it's in Shabbos, Nunheyom Beis, and it's a series of people who, in the Torah, in Tanakh, who seemingly did something, a grave avera, and the Gemara has a number of statements about these different people that are, anyone who says that so-and-so sinned is only mistaken. They didn't really sin. So the Gemara says, Amr b'shmo bar Nachmeni, Amr b'yonathan, Kala omer b'nei Eli chatu, anyone who says that the sons of Eli sinned, eino ala toa, is mistaken. They didn't sin. Now Rashi right away qualifies that. Rashi qualifies that statement, and Rashi says, whoever says that they sinned with adultery is mistaken. However, they certainly were mevaze kachim. They did disgrace the karbanos. That they certainly did.
Rabbi. This is Sefer Shmuel.
Yes.
It was written by Shmuel Hanavi. He was an eyewitness to these activities. Why would the text not be trusted?
So you have to. It's a matter of interpretation of the text. Why they know that? How they know that Asher Yishkevun doesn't mean that they. So I have to see what the Shatim are offered, and I can go back and see. I didn't look at it, but usually the Mefarshim on the Gemara will try to explain where the, you know, where they're coming from.
Where's the ambiguity?
So I have to look it up. The Marsha is likely to talk about something like that. I didn't look it up, but I will try to try and get back. Yeah, so I have to see. Let's see what the options are and where they're coming from. It's a good question. So what does the Gemara say? So the Gemara says that how do we know that they didn't sin? Because it says later in actually I think earlier. Let's see what pasuk it's referring to. Yeah, so back in pasuk, Perek Aleph, pasuk Gimel, it says that that Elkanah would go up every year to the Mishkan, and there were the Bnei Eli, Chofni and Pinchas, Kohanim LaHashem. And I suppose where he's coming from is the fact that he says they were Kohanim LaHashem sounds like they were proper Kohanim.
Except their own father in the next sentence talks about their evil deeds.
Okay, it's a good question. But on the other hand, we have them being described as Kohanim LaHashem, that type of praise. So they were obviously Kohanim LaHashem also. They were servants of Hashem. So, right, we have to work all these things out.
They were human.
But you said that's only one opinion, too, not to take it so literally, right?
Let's see. Yeah, well,
that's not like the...
It's not the pshat. It's not the pshat. That's where, right, Rashi says, kimashmo. That's what Rashi says first. It means as it says. The Rabboseinu Amru and the Chazal say, now some say when Rashi says that, you know, there's a reason why he's saying, but the Rabbi, the Rabboseinu, because Rashi had great respect for Chazal, and he's saying, but this is how it should be properly understood. Right. I mean, so it doesn't say exactly where it's coming from, why that, you know, how it learned from that pasuk. I suppose No, the fact that the pasuk goes out of its way to say they were kohanim l'Hashem is a praise.
Couldn't that just be simply saying they were like kohanim l'Hashem? Like
that's what he wants to say. It could be. If you at the time, by the way,
perfect. They're not perfect.
At the time when we learned that pasuk, we actually offered different shatim of why, again, to their negative character traits, that despite that they were, or we one, I think one thing we said was it says it because that we talked about at the time that Elkanah, you know, had to recruit people. People weren't going up to the Mishkan, and he had to. He was Mekare people. He did outreach, and he brought people to the Mishkan. And one shot we said was that the reason why people didn't want to come to the Mishkan was because, as the pasuk there says, because Chofni and Pinchas were the Kohanim, you know, so that's why they didn't want to come. So,
at least not with their wives.
What?
At least not with their wives.
Yeah, but even they weren't going to eat their meat. So, right, they wouldn't be able to eat their meat. So there's different ways to understand it. But it's important, you know, we for sure have to see how Chazal understood it. And so the Gemara goes on and it says, he held like Rav. Now Rav in the Gemara splits it. Rav says that Pinchas lo chata. Only one of them didn't sin. Pinchas. Chofni sinned. Pinchas did not. And the first opinion of Shmuel bar Nachmani in the name of Rabbi Yonatan is saying that, no, both of them didn't sin. So, but Rav saying, Pinchas lo chata, he didn't sin. And Shmuel bar Nachmani, Rabbi Yonatan says, and we learn, just like Pinchas didn't sin, so also Chofni didn't sin. Now, why does Rav say that, so if they didn't sin, so what do I do with the pasuk that says Asher Yishkivu Nasanashin that they would lie with the women? So the Gemara says, Mitoch Sheshow Es Kineyen Shalohochu Eitel Baalein, since they delayed the women, their karbanos. We're talking about women who would come after having a baby to bring a karban. Or after they were zavos, after they had these excretions, they would have to bring a karban to become pure. So either way, they were the women's karbanas, their bird karbanas, and Chofni and Pinchas, they took their time, and the women would end up having to stay longer and stay overnight, camped out. So because of that, the pasuk considers it as if they slept with them because they delayed them from returning to their husband. They prevented further period of arrivia, further proliferation. And that's why it's considered as if they lay with them. Some of them, Farshim, want to offer a little bit of a deeper understanding to that. So, for example, the Malbim says that that if you read the pasuk carefully, it says, "V'shama Yitzchak Asher Yasim Banav L'Kol Yisrael." He heard what his sons were doing to the people of Israel, "Ve'Eis Asher Yishkivu Es Hanashim," and how they were making them lie, or how they were lying with the women. So, who was lying with the women? So, the Malbim says what happened was that what would happen is because they would delay the karbanos, so then the women would have to stay overnight, camped out in front of the Mishkan, along with, I guess, other people who had to camp out also for their delayed karbanos, for whatever reason. And as a result of that, there were men there, there were women there, they were hanging out, and those men would end up sleeping with these women. And it wasn't that the Bnei Eli were sleeping with them, but Mitoch Sheshow Es Kineyem, because they, that's what, as the Gemara says, he's trying to fit the Gemara's pshat into the pasuk, that it was a sin what they were doing to the Jewish people in delaying their karbanos, causing them to sin with these women who were outside.
It seems hard to believe their own father would call these devarim ra'im, evil deeds.
Depends what he's referring to. He could be referring to the... This puts it all together, really, that the way that they treated the karbanos, right? He could be referring to the karbanos part. The pasuk spent a lot of time on describing that. So,
I'm talking about the strength of the language. The language is so strong, coming from their own father, that you wouldn't think he'd apply it merely to delaying women overnight.
All right. So the Gemara goes on though, and it says now. So that was the opinion of Rabbi Yonasan, that Rav said that Pinchas didn't sin, only Chafni, and Rabbi Yonasan said that we learn a hekesh, there's the juxtaposition of Chafni and Pinchas, that just like Pinchas didn't sin, so also Chafni didn't sin. Now, what does it mean? Why? Now, Rav held that just Pinchas didn't sin. So Rav says that, how does he know that Pinchas didn't sin? So he quotes the pasuk later, and it says, Ve'achia ben achitov achi ekavod ben Pinchas ben Eli calling Hashem. So it's a pasuk in chapter 14 of Shmuel, and it talks about the lineage of this person Achia, and it traces him back to Pinchas ben Eli, and says Rav, if Pinchas was a sinner, so why would the pasuk trace his lineage back to him? It's trying to show that he was a fine lineage, and if Pinchas was a sinner, then it wouldn't trace his lineage. And you see from that pasuk that Pinchas wasn't the singer; it was only Chafni.
That's a lot of liberty. I don't know. That's a lot of like liberty taken.
I don't think so. That's
this
common.
And
that
this and this, like,
I don't. I mean, that's pretty standard. That you know, if it shows lineage, so he was a tzaddik.
Esau had great lineage.
But does he ever trace a tzaddik up to Esau and say, look, this guy, you know, bang him, Esau? No, we wouldn't want to point out that he's Ben Esav.
Amalek.
What?
Amalek.
Right, Amalek's not a tzaddik.
Yeah, but they trace his lineage.
Right, but we're talking about where you take in a positive sense, that this person, Achia, was a descendant of Achitov, the son of Echavod, the son of Pinchas ben Eli, is showing that he had good lineage. So you see that's good lineage. That
all
being
right.
A descendant of Pinchas is good lineage.
All right. So perhaps we could explain then why it uses the word son.
Oh, so let's see.
They would lie with the women, not singular, not Hophni.
So let's see. So let's see what the Gemara says. The Gemara is onto this also. So da 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 da. Right, so first of all, what we benefited so far is now there is one person who the psukim are explicitly about. Our only question is going to be, why are they plural? So the Gemara asked, okay, but it says Asher Yishkevun. It says it in plural. So the Gemara answers that it is written without the Vav. Asher Yishkevun. Where is it?
I have a vav.
I have a vav too. But the Gemara says that it's written without a vav. So, okay. What time are we at?
It is 10:35.
Oh, we're supposed to be finished. Okay, let's just finish this up. Okay, that's a good question. You don't have a vav. You have a vav. Okay. I'll have to work on this some more. Pasuk... Pasuk Chafdei.
I have a vav, you have a vav. Right.
And I have a vav too.
30 of a vav?
The Eli, Zakei Melis?
Yeah, in that pasuk, verse 22.
Yeah.
It says, Asher Yishkevun.
Yeah, I have it with the vav. Okay, the truth is, I'm not even so sure what the significance of not having a vav is, because it's still plural. So I'm going to have to work on this a little bit more. Vaksiv, and it says...
Because of this bazaar would indicate singular? doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, it still seems to be plural. I mean, the fact that it would be chaser would tell you something. If it's lacking a letter, it's sending some message. But we'll have to look back at that. Fine, you know what? So we're going to work on this more. And I see that it's... This is a hot topic over here. This is exact reading of this. So
further, it says that God like decides. Never mind. That's it. God decides that they should be.
The Gemara poses the other question that it says Bnei Belial, that the sons of Pinchas of Eli were Bnei Belial. They were singers. So to that, the Gemara says, because Pinchas should have been Moche, he should have protested the acts of his brother Chofni. And he didn't, so it's as if he himself sinned.
Yeah, well...
So really, you could try to use that throughout, that type of reasoning, but...
Well, here's another one.
Okay.
Lama ta'asun. Why do you do these things? Plural,
yeah.
You. That's their own father speaking. He's treating them as being on the same evil plane.
These are good questions.
I'm going with Rashi here.
All right.